Hey, it's Darren Johnson, Campus XM.
It's getting nice out. It's about 50 degrees, early April. Just came from the Planet Fitness, and I know they want to call it the No Judgment Zone, but right off the bat, they misspell the word judgment, so they have an E in it, and they have a second E in it. You know, judgment, there's an E right in the middle of it. And the real word judgment is with only one E. Ment has an E, but it's J-U-D-G-M-E-N-T. So there's only one E. And so, are they being ironic? Are they saying, all right, you know, yeah, we're the no judgment zone, but really you're supposed to judge? Like, you know, maybe. I'm sure everyone's secretly judging. So when I entered, there was, you know, I've been getting aware of my age, and you know, I'm approaching 50. In less than a year, I'll be 50. And there's certain things I just know I'll never do again, and I can't do, or I shouldn't do. So as soon as I enter the gym, I see this guy, and he's maybe 30. 28, 30, I don't know, somewhere. This gym gets heavily populated by college students and then older people who are semi-retired. And I guess I fit into that latter category. Even though I own a business, my hours are so flexible. I can do whatever I want. No boss for me. In any case, he was on this, on these like bars, and he could propel his body totally lateral as if he were laying on the ground, but there was nothing there, just him holding himself up on the bars. And he did like 6 push-ups off these bars totally laterally, so nothing supporting his feet or legs. I was like looking, I was like, what's supporting his feet or legs? How's he doing this? And I thought back, and probably there were points in my life where I could come close to doing something like that, and I just can't anymore, you know, no judgment, but I can't do that anymore. And I shouldn't do that anymore. I shouldn't aspire to that anymore. When I was 38, I was lifting weights and I was doing too much weight and I hurt my shoulder. You know, and when I was younger, I played sports and was pretty good at lifting weights and all of that. But I hurt my shoulder and nothing was torn according to my doctor, who really is just a, what are they called? Like a nurse practitioner. It's really just a nurse practitioner because that's what my insurance would pay for. And he said, no, there's nothing torn in there. I think I went for some kind of sonogram or MRI or something. Nothing's torn in there. But I probably activated some bursitis. And that hurt for a good few years. Like, it definitely cut back on any weightlifting I could do for a few years. I could mostly do cardio after that. And it definitely, like, kind of made me miserable. You know, sometimes it would just act up and it would hurt. And, you know, who knows? They say most back pain is aggravated by mental issues, like, you know, tension you might be going through at work or something like that. And perhaps I was working for the man, and perhaps that was exacerbating it. But definitely there was something physical there. And I can't do that anymore. I see people on the leg press machine, and they do what I used to do. They throw on every plate possible, and they push it up. I used to be able to push up, like, ungodly amounts. It would make me feel good, but I really shouldn't do that. Let's say I hurt my knee or something. You know, at this point, probably my 50s are my last hurrah. It's all downhill. So do I want to go into my 50s with aches and pains? Or do I want to just be, like, marginally refreshed? So, you know, no judgment, you know. And I think the person who originally came up with the no judgment probably was, like, this meathead at the gym. He was like, yeah, I got a way to market this. Let's call it the no judgment zone. You know, we'll get in all the fatties. You know, that was probably his opinion. He was probably some steroided guy, you know, that is balding and his testicles have shriveled to raisins. And he's, you know, that was his marketing gimmick. We'll make all the machines purple and yellow, you know, real fruity, man. You know, that was his probably his way, because I played a lot of sports and I was around these people. And that was his idea. He probably hasn't read a book. Whenever I meet someone who's that much into fitness, I wonder, like, when was the last time they read a book? Because you could do both. You could work out a little and read books. You know, I recently bought a car, and the car salesman was a little older than me, but he still was in that mindset. You know, like, sometimes you talk to someone who was either a veteran or they played sports or some combination thereof, and that's all they want to talk about is the thing they did when they were 20, you know, some sport they played. So that was the language that I shared with this guy, and he really hadn't matured, and that's why he's selling, you know, used cars, and I'm kind of semi-retired. I'm not chained to a desk. Because I moved on, and that guy probably, you know, the guy who invented the no judgment with two E's zone probably hadn't read a book in a while. And that's the second half of this thread I want to talk about is our books and books in the thrift store. And I just wrote an article on that for Campus News, and I'll attach this podcast to the online version of that article. Campus News April edition just went to press. So I'm in the gym and I'm working out, and you know, all the TVs are on, and I'm looking at all the equipment I'll never do again, and I realize, like, I've been working out for a few months now and I haven't really lost any weight. I still kind of have a belly, you know, which is awful to think about, but I still have a belly. And maybe if I lost a belly, I could do those parallel push-ups, those lateral push-ups off of some weird bar. I doubt it, but, you know, in my mind. And I've been feeling bad because I think I should be going faster on the treadmill, but I have shorter legs. You know, my father was born in the Philippines, and I have a lot of Philippine relatives, and I've seen Filipinos, and they have shorter legs, so I must have gotten that gene. My upper body is probably above average. My torso, when I'm sitting down, I'm as tall as any guy. But when I stand, I'm a few inches shorter than, like, a six-foot guy. So I have these shorter legs. So, you know, if I were in the fours jogging on the treadmill, I felt bad because I'd see other people, and they were in the sixes and sevens. I saw this couple. They were one of these, like, twin tower couples. And male and female, and the guy must have been like 6'10 or so, 6'11, and she was probably like 6'5. Maybe they were on the local. Hey, pardon the interruption. The last card was full. I just got a new card in the mail that's like 16 times bigger than this one, and I haven't put it in my case yet. So the card was full. I don't know where exactly it cut off, but I was in the gym, and I was probably talking about that and books, and I also go to the thrift store sometimes after and pick up used books, because I read books the same way people read magazines, and they, you know, I'll pick it up and I'll read a little here, especially nonfiction books. I'll read a little here, a little there. But I've noticed it's getting harder via the thrift store to find good used books. And I think it's because I saw this guy in the thrift store, and he had, like, he was sharply dressed, and he had on one of those blue things on his ear, Bluetooth, you know, that was lit up like he was Data from Star Trek or something. And he was well-groomed, and he had a scanner and a basket, and he went through the books. He rifled through them, you know, quickly pulling them, and he would scan them with the blue laser, and it would, like, beep, and he would decide whether he wanted to put that book in his basket or not. So he was taking any book from the thrift store that had any resale value to it, I assume. He was taking, like, you know, if it scanned and said, hey, you could sell this online for $5, and the thrift store only charges $1, he would make a profit there, you know, plus the postage and all that stuff. So he had an algorithm, a personal algorithm to take books off a shelf. And he was taking anything of value. And I was like, oh, there must be people like this with this technology at every, you know, thrift store now. You know, it's going to be so hard to find books, and I like to find, because I use books like magazines, or I misuse them actually, like magazines or newspapers, I like to have a lot around, and I don't like to spend a lot on them. I don't want to spend $20 on a book. I'm just going to kind of, you know, maybe read a few chapters here or there, just get the feel of it. So most books, I don't read cover to cover. You know, I just kind of read them the way they are. And this guy was spoiling the fun. You know, he was taking all the fun out of it. And I started to look at what books were left, and they'd fall into a few categories. One category was fallen political people. So Al Franken, for example. And Al Franken really shouldn't be a fallen political person, but maybe he should be, I guess. But he was on Saturday Night Live, and then he got serious, boringly serious, and he ran for, I guess he was a senator, maybe he was a congressman first, up in Minnesota, and he won, barely. That's a state where, you know, someone odd can win. Jesse Ventura was governor, the former jobber wrestler Jesse Ventura was a governor. So, you know, weird things can happen in that state. He ran as an independent, too, which is even harder, but somehow he won. So Al Franken had a book there, and he on one of his, I think he did this before he was a politician, on one of his doing something good for the troops, you know, one of those tours he did, when one of the female correspondents, or maybe she was even a soldier, had fallen asleep, he posed behind her in a funny way as if he were tweaking her breasts, and that, you know, that defamed him. You know, sometimes I think if you can be defamed or not depends a lot on what level of power you have. Like Trump can have sex with prostitutes and porn stars and totally okay, and he can call them ugly after even. And this guy does before he's even a politician, a funny picture, you know, that he thinks is funny. Yeah, it goes too far. With someone on a plane, didn't really touch her, just kind of pretended to touch her, and then he's defrocked. So, all right, there's that. Dan Quayle, the guy who couldn't spell potato, he put an E at the end when he was in a classroom. Hit one of his books are on the shelf, and maybe he should work for the No Judgment D Zone. You know, he should work for them and help them with their spelling. Dan Quayle, I think he's still alive. One of the dumbest vice presidents we've ever had. You know he didn't write that book, too, by the way. You know, like he probably scribbled a few ideas and someone else did the writing. And, you know, Bill O'Reilly had a book there, probably Rush Limbaugh, you know, those types of people, idiots. All right, and then the second category of books are like these brand author books, like Nelson DeMille and Stephen King, and, you know, they're kind of like syndicate-type books. Nora Roberts, you know, they somehow write 2 or 3 books a year. Yeah, right. They probably just free write. And when I look at them, they just look like jibber-jabber in them. But people get, just like they get addicted to radio shows and they get addicted to TV shows, they could get addicted to a certain writer and his style, even if it is jibber-jabber. Look at soap operas. People are still addicted to those. And those are very poorly written. Or The Walking Dead somehow is still on TV, but it's so poorly written. So people can get addicted. The Simpsons can get addicted to something and they just want to keep with it. So whatever Stephen King puts out, there will be, you know, I don't know, 100,000, 200,000 people who will buy it. So he may as well pump them out. So he needs to maximize his output. And he probably writes them and then he has like a really good copy editor. Well, not really. He seems like his books are long, so they probably don't cut them, but they probably clean them up a good deal. Because no one can write like that and just be that clean. You know, unless they're writing for Dan Quayle or the No Judgment Zone or something. And then the next category of books are like celebrity tell-alls. And these books are all written in the same style. So they must all have the same ghostwriters. And you know they don't write them. Like I hear Howard Stern. There's 2 Howard Stern books from the 90s that I find all the time in the thrift stores. And they're horrible. They're just like retells of his radio show. And now he has a new book out that is like the same thing. Just like some some poor schlub has to transcribe his old radio shows and turn it into book form. And, you know, because he's Howard Stern, he gets the best editors and the best publicists, and he gets on, like, Rolling Stone and 60 Minutes and all these different shows. And it's discouraging for someone to, you know, a writer like me who tries to put a lot of care into work and does everything myself. I studied writing, went to college for writing, got a master's in writing, a bachelor's in writing, went to all kinds of writing workshops. I was a copy editor for newspapers for years. All kinds. I devoted so much to the world of writing, read all the great books, and have written critiques and have done journalism. And so when I write a book, I'm, you know, won awards. When I write a book, sit down and write a book, it's a, I'm going to take it seriously. I'm going to put my all into it. And then you see someone like this. You know, I get like 2 downloads a week or something of my book. And this guy is getting on 60 Minutes for a book he didn't even really write. It's garbage. So there's the celebrity tell-alls. And they're written in the style of the day and very name-droppy. And who buys these? You'd have to be an idiot. Whenever someone posts on Facebook or something that they're reading a celebrity tell-all, I just want to... I make fun of them. All right. I don't do it online, though, because that's trollish. But I do it, you know, I say, hey, did you see so-and-so's reading XYZ to someone I know who has good literary taste, and they just roll their eyes. You know, we judge you. So there's that. I don't know how far I got previously on my tirade about the no judgment zone at Planet Fitness, but I was getting to the point where I said I had short legs, and I saw a guy with short legs of similar heritage to me, and he was going fine at 4.0. And I said, all right, I'm going to go in the 4s. And I was able to last much longer, and my shirt was drenched with sweat after. So I think that's kind of the sweet spot if you are getting, like, past middle age. Like, just go in the 4s. Don't worry about what other people are doing at the gym. You know, if they can laterally push up themselves or do other things. I think the key is to go regularly. But the fact of the matter is you just don't lose weight at this point. So there's nothing. I guess it's heart healthy. All right, so other types of books you see in the thrift store are like old computer programming books, like COBOL or Pascal or Fortran, you know, those type books that people who studied that stuff in the 80s, they couldn't find jobs in the 90s and such because they didn't update their skills. They got a foundation in a computer language, but then they didn't learn C++ or whatever came out after all those languages. So and then they whined a lot. Oh, I can't get a job. I'm waiting tables. Well, you know, college, your education's not supposed to stop with college. It's supposed to keep it going. All right, another type of book are fad diet books and, you know, whatever, the Atkins or the Westchester diet or whatever diet it is, the Scarsdale or whatever. And these books get dumped off at thrift stores. No one wants them anymore. And they're just money grabs. You know, do you really need 300 pages to, you know, to tell someone just to not eat bread? Do you really need 300 pages for that? I could probably sum up those books in a page. So I think they just, they know they have to have a certain algorithm. Like if it's 300 pages, it'll sell. And they write it to length, whatever the publisher tells them. And then another type of book, someone's beeping at some jerk on the street. You know, some other types of books that kind of just linger there are psychological books, like where they put the psychology in a homespun way, like Chicken Soup for the Blank Soul, the teenage soul, the middle-aged soul, the, you know, mentally disturbed soul. Whatever your soul is, they have a Chicken Soup book. You know, then they have, like, Dummies books, like Psychotherapy for Dummies, you know, or Fortran for Dummies or whatever. Or they'll have men are from Mars, women are from Venus, and then they had all the variations on that. You know, men are from, men have a penis, and women have, you know, whatever. So they had different variations on the men and women theme. The Secret, you know, where you can visualize success. I'm going to be a millionaire. I notice dumb people believe in stuff like The Secret. Like they say they're going to win the lottery because they're visualizing it, and then they don't win the lottery. So books like that. I see in the thrift store, and all the good books get taken and resold. And you don't see, like, the Great Gatsby's, and you don't see the Confederacy of Dunces, and you don't see the Idiots and the War and Pieces and the Lolitas and the Huckleberry Finns. And you don't see those books in the thrift store. And it makes me wonder if, success is transient. And maybe that's not what you should aspire to, is immediate success. But permanence isn't guaranteed. And you should want to create the work that people don't want to get rid of. You should create something that has permanence to it, where someone would be going through all their Chicken Soup for the Soul and Fortran for Dummies books and not want to give that to the Goodwill. They're saying, no, I'm keeping that book. That book has some meaning. And that's something you should try to create, even if it means you won't sell hundreds of thousands of books. Because H.L. Mencken said, there's no accounting for the lack of taste of the public, or some paraphrase thereof. No one ever went poor overestimating the taste of the American public, I believe is more closely related to the actual quote. How do you like that, Ginkgo Biloba? Pulled that quote out of nowhere. So you can't go by these ghost-written books from Howard Stern and Katy Perry or whoever, Dan Quayle. You can't live your life and say, wow, they're more successful than me. No, they're not. You know, the person that put in the effort and they put in all the work, that book is more meaningful, and those are the books no one wants to get rid of. So the books you don't see in the thrift store are the ones that have some permanence. And speaking of lack of permanence, let me bring this back, and I'll go back to the no judgment zone. I do judge what's on the TV. I mentioned that I try to get in front of the Seinfeld TV. It's on TBS, and if I get there too early, it's King of Queens, and if I get there too late, it's Friends. And both of those shows came out after Seinfeld. King of Queens is like with the schlubby fat guy who just, his nagging wife just gets on his case, and he works for UPS, and all these shows, they cater to, like, this middle-class persona. Because I guess that's who the bulk of people who buy the Pringles chips and such that advertise during these shows are. And then Friends, I just don't get the Friends thing. I know a lot of, like, millennials like Friends. And maybe it's less complicated than Seinfeld. But Seinfeld is, like, they're each episode, and I read it over the... I listen to music, and I read Seinfeld on the closed captioning. And each one is like a little Chekhov play. They're so tightly written. And I could see like college theater troupes redoing these Seinfeld plays, you know, 50, 100 years from now. A little black box college troupe doing, today we're going to do the, Master of My Domain episode of Seinfeld. And people will clap at the end and think how witty it is. You know, I could see that happening. The Marble Rye episode. Or something like that. But all the other TVs have Drek on them. They have the Yankee Channel, which plays like yesterday's game. And there's nothing more meaningless than watching a single baseball game for the half hour or hour you're on the machine. Like, that's just garbage. And, who cares? You're going to watch 10 foul balls in that time. That's all you're going to see. But then it's a repeat of a game, so you could just Google it. Do you really need to see some guy, like, hitting 5 foul balls? Is that some guy you've never heard of before? Is that interesting? And I was reading an article that, oh, boo-hoo, the average major league salary is down to $4 million a year. It used to be higher. Oh, poor major leaguers. To hit foul balls, you know, to wear a uniform. You're 30 years old, you're wearing a uniform. And you're hitting balls, and that's it. But they had that hyper-focus. You know, they didn't judge, or they did judge, and they had that long time. They didn't read books, and they went into the major leagues, and that's how they did it. Played video games instead. Helped their reflexes. And then on another TV is like Kelly and Ryan Seacrest, which used to be like Regis and Kathy Lee, and then it was Regis and Kelly, and then she had the linebacker guy from the Giants and Michael Strahan. And, that guy should get his muffler fixed. And it's the most insipid show. It's just like, I'm looking up, and at one point, Ryan's drinking pickle juice out of a pickle jar. What's the point in that? What's the meaning of that? And then they have this woman, they pull someone out of the audience. You know, you have this nice trip to New York City. You're staying at a nice hotel, the Marriott, Times Square or something. You're from the Midwest. This is your one trip to New York City. And you go and you go to Kelly and Ryan. That's why you spend your day. You wait in line and for hours. And then you get in there in some cold studio and you watch this stupid show. And they grab someone from the audience. And it's usually, you know, it's embarrassing. They make them dance. And the woman was, you know, very heavy set, you know, bottom heavy. And she was, like, trying to dance in a funny way, you know, like where she's whipping a horse or something. It's just, I don't know, is that your life? You know, is that your life? This is your moment in time that you're on the show. And does that really make you happy? Are you truly happy doing that dance and, you know, making a fool of yourself? And does anyone enjoy that? What's the point in all this? And then on the other TV, I'll close this one out because I don't know how long the other podcast recorded. There was something called The Doctors, a TV show called The Doctors. And I don't know what kind of doctors are these, but they had two leggy women in really short shorts, about 23 maybe. And they were, you know, attractive women. And I guess their problem was ruddy thighs. They had ruddy thighs, pale ruddy thighs or something, blotchy, I don't know. Who cares? No guy in the world would care. They were 23-year-old attractive women. No guy in the world would care. And they put some kind of cream on their legs. And then they showed before and after, and it looks like they just used a like an Instagram filter, but their legs were now slightly smoother looking from this cream, and the women, you know, extolled the virtues of it. And it was some cream that probably the doctors are getting 10% of or 20% of per sale. And who would watch a show? Who lets themselves be advertised to? It's just like going on Facebook. Why do you go on Facebook? You let yourself be marketed to. They know who you are. You're a type. So, you know, give up Facebook if you can. I recently did. And then at the end of The Doctors, they were eating, like, these chicken wings. And a lot of these morning shows, they incorporate food into them. The Ryan and Kelly thing did, too. So they must get a cut of the food action. And that's what they were chomping on these. And they were saying, these are doctor-approved, I guess they're MDs, maybe. They don't look like MDs, but they blow-dry their hair, I guess. And it's doctor-approved chicken wings, so eat these chicken wings. What kind of a show is this? How responsible is that? Who's watching these shows? I guess the people who are watching it are like these homebodies and semi-retired people like me, I guess. And they're watching it. Thank God for Seinfeld, because I'd probably be 20 pounds heavier if Seinfeld didn't exist. It's the only thing worth watching at the gym at this early morning hour on TBS. Well, you've been listening to Campus XM. We've recently relaunched our radio station, so now we have music. We're going to have a new feature called After the Fire, where we find bands that had hits in the 80s, and we're going to find a good song that they had after, that very few people know about now. So it's called After the Fire, after they had their day. Because, let's say a band had some good songs in the 80s, they won't play them anywhere else on the 90s channels. Their 90s songs won't get heard because the 90s channels are devoted to hits, pop hits, or grunge. So if they didn't fit into that category, there's some other songs they might have had that don't fit into the 80s new wave motif. All right. Goodbye, Campus XM. Find it there. And buy my book on profmule.com. Profmule.com.